There's a rumor going round that they're going to turn the Dog and Pullet into a Wild West saloon. Well, if they do, I shan't be going down there anymore. And I've been a regular there ever since I left school, I suppose. It's the new landlord. They always want to change things. I've seen out 17 landlords at the Dog and Pullet. They don't last long. The place seems to drain them. They come in all bright and breezy, but inside 3 months they go sort of soggy. It's a pub that's got its own ways, you see. I mean, it's not really a jolly place. People go in there for a quiet, serious drink. They don't want hijinks when they're drowning their sorrows. Oh, there's darts and dominoes and sometimes a hand of crib, but nothing strenuous. The regulars don't want people firing off six-shooters or singing about a horse. From what I've seen on the films, these Wild West saloons can be pretty rough, mind you. There may be nothing in it. I only got the news from Charlie Bates, and it may be a bit of wishful thinking. Charlie's son, young Tommy, is a fully trained country and western singer. And I know now that he's got to 40 that Charlie and his missus would like to get him off their hands. He had a job at Tommy, I mean, not Charlie. Oh, no, he retired in his youth, did Charlie. He wanted to be a drum major in a military band, but when they said he was too short, he sort of sulked a lot and then lost interest. To be fair, Tommy did get a job doing this country and western stuff in a place called the Beer Keller. You'd have thought it was all umpah, stick it up your jumper in those places, but you can't tell a book by its cover, especially nowadays. It was one of those German places. Well, they weren't really German, but they dressed up in short trousers and long socks like Boy Scouts, but I don't think they are. It's not proper beer, this German stuff. It froths up and it never seems to settle, all head and no body, and it sends people silly, slapping their knees and stamping about as though they've trodden in something. Rita, my wife, well, her name isn't Rita, really, but she fancied a change. She said that these Wild West places don't serve beer. She got it from a library book. She loves a good Western, does Rita? I think it's the Welsh in her. Anyway, Rita says they drink something called Red Eye, which is what the Dog goes down with every winter. As far as drinking is concerned, I can't say I like the way things are going. There's a wine bar in the High Street now. It's a dark, dingy place that smells of French onion cellars. Rita says I won't try anything, but I've got nothing against foreign food. I just think they ought to leave it where it is. If you go abroad, you know what you're in for, but there's no need to have it at home. I don't suppose the French or Italians have black pudding or Yorkshire, and tripe and onions would be wasted on an Eskimo. I suppose it's something to do with the common market, that we have to take a quota of the stuff they're fed up with to get rid of some of our muck. It's all got international now. I expect you can get Irish stew in litres. When you think of all we went through in the war, if there was one thing I was clear about, it was the preservation of the British public house. I mean, that's how people abroad think of us, all standing around, half-sozzled in the 4-ale bar. It's one of the things we're good at. Some of the Yanks who came over got settled in the snug and never went back, and they've got Wild West saloons at home. Well, it was last Tuesday. No, I tell a lie. No, I don't. Yes, I do. It was the Wednesday before. Not that it matters, you see. After that business last year, I didn't think I'd hear any more about the carnival. I'd been on the committee ever since I was married. Rita said it had helped to take my mind off it. And I hardly thought they'd blame me when the float with the vicar's wife as Britannia somehow became unhinged and rolled backwards onto the steam traction engine. Anyhow, to cut a long story short, Charlie and Fred Hooper came around and asked me if I'd stand again. I know I should have been firm. Oh, I'm a fool to myself, but Rita said it would get me out of the house while she had a spiritualism. It was Arnold, the town clerk, who upset me when he said that the carnival would have to be cancelled unless people like me rallied round. The only thing I've seen Arnold rallying round is the beer tent. One year he rallied round the tent pole and dragged the whole lot down, and then he tried to convince little Miss Frobisher that she'd been in the ghost train. The carnival has been going on here for as long as anyone can remember. It's what you might call a regular feature. It's more than likely that Boadicea trundled up the high street on a cart. In fact, there's a couple of old chaps in the rest home that swear they remember it. The real trouble started when strangers started getting on the committee. People who hadn't been here more than 20 years, putting themselves up for jobs for which they simply hadn't got the experience. Oh, the ordinary common or garden carnival wasn't good enough for them. They wanted a theme. A theme? Why? After all, we've never had any complaints. We have the beauty queen, about half a dozen lorries, and the decorated hearse. Some of the lads put on women's dresses and wigs. The band plays the floral dance, and that usually gets us through until opening time. It was a bit of trouble last year when this Norwegian sailor got one of the lads in a corner, and we had to pop his balloons on the quick before it all smoothed over. Finally, it was decided that the theme would have to be something general like spring or winter sports or the Battle of Sedgemoor, and once this was agreed, the whole idea of a theme seemed to fade. The vicar's wife didn't see herself in a space suit, and nobody else could see her as King Arthur. The strange thing was that on the day of the carnival, Rita had one of her premonitions. She's been having these premonitions for years, and they've never made an atom of sense. I don't argue with her because it brings her out in a rash, and then she expects me to go out collecting stinging nettles to make a poultice. Well, this time she'd got it hot and strong. Something terrible is going to happen in the procession, she said. I pressed her for some details, but that was all I could get out of her. We'd arranged to muster at 2 o'clock on the square, but by the time they'd all got thrown out of the Happy Huntsman, it was 3:15. There were around 100 people in costumes. We had Cromwell and Can-Can dancers, Captain Bligh and Marilyn Monroe, Long John Silver and Lady Jane Grey. The girl guides had got themselves up as a tribe of cannibals, and the scouts had dressed themselves as girl guides, as they usually do. And there were 10 floats, if you count the fire engine and the breakdown van. The band set off, and I'd just let the majorettes loose when suddenly Charlie shouted, "Look!" at the top of his voice. "Look," I said, "well, that's what we hope people are doing. Otherwise, we're all going to look pretty silly." "No," he said, pointing up in the air. "Up there." So I looked up to where he was pointing, and on the window of the top flat above the betting shop, I could see this chap half sitting, half hanging, dangling, you might say, on the windowsill. I could see at once that it was going to be embarrassing. I mean, to say people all painted and dressed up out of the goodness of their hearts and for charity, a whole group of girl guides shivering in grass skirts and everybody gawping up at this lunatic and taking no notice at all of the effort that had been put in. Some of the mothers stay up all night making these things and they don't like to be ignored. "Have you lost your ladder?" I shouted, thinking that he might have been window cleaning and the ladder had perhaps slipped away from him, but this only seemed to make him more excited. "I'll jump," he shouted, and started doing fancy stuff, hanging on with one hand. "Careful," I shouted, "there's no room here. You'll have to hold on while I clear a space. You're likely to hurt somebody." "You'll have to go up," said Charlie. "You'll have to reason with him." "Me?" I said. "Why me? I didn't ask him to climb out there and spoil everything." "You're the parade marshal," said Charlie. "It's your job to clear the way." "On the ground," I said. "Not up there." He's very good, is Charlie, at shoving things onto other people. If Rita happened to see me going into the betting shop, it'd be bread and water for 3 weeks. The chap in the betting shop wasn't helpful either. In fact, he was downright awkward. "Do you want to lay a bet?" "Of course I don't want to lay a bet," I said. "In any case, you could only get even money on a thing like that." "I just want to get up your back stairs," I said. "There's a man hanging out of the top window threatening to throw himself out, and he may need some help." Well, it was a devil of a way up there, and when I was halfway up, I thought, what if he's gone when I get there and I've got myself all of a muck sweat for nothing? Anyway, I've found him still hanging on. Don't you come near me, he said. Oh, I could see he was in a thoroughly nasty mood. One more step and I'd jump, he said. Now, don't take on so. I've come to ask you to hold on a bit. I know it may not be the best carnival we've had, but there's no need to do anything drastic. I've had enough, he said. Now, just hold on a minute, I said. You've not seen the best bits. There's the Snow White float to come and the vicar's wife in the nun's story. Look, I said, just give us 10 minutes. It'll all be through by then. After that, you can make up your own mind. I don't think you're giving it a fair trial, seeing it piecemeal. You've got to try and view it as a whole. I don't care about your blasted carnival, he said. Now, you're just being thoroughly selfish, I said, causing all this fuss and spoiling the day for all those people who've turned up to see something exciting. At this point, he got really vicious. Go away, he shouted and rolled his eyes madly. Tell me, I said, why are you doing this? Is it something I've said? We hardly know each other, do we? And the way you're going on, we'll scarcely have the chance. Then I saw the top of the fire engine ladder just outside the window with Tubby Edlin waving at me like an idiot. Take it down, said the man on the windowsill. How can I take it down? I don't even know how the thing works. I didn't put it up, did I? I've been up here with you all the time. Besides, it's all out of order. With them coming out of their place in the parade, it'll throw the whole thing out of sequence. All this seemed to irritate the chap. Oh, you could see he was on a short fuse. When people are that edgy, the slightest little thing can send them off at half cock. By this time, the fire engine ladder had got closer to the window and Tubby Edlin's fat, stupid face was at eye level. All right, said Tubby and winked. Oh, he's a fool, is Tubby. Ought not to be let out with a pram, let alone a fire engine. No, it's not all right, I said. It'll be all right when you get back into line and stop waving about like a monkey on a stick. Some people can't abide any sort of discipline. Is he going to jump? Tubby shouted. How the devil do I know, I said. He hasn't made his mind up. Just get the parade through while he's thinking about it. Tell them to march off. They won't do that, said Tubby. They all want to see what happens. There, I said. Now see what you've done. You've gone and spoiled everything. Well, I hope you're satisfied. Well, he sulked a bit after that, and I thought I might be able to get down and get them reassembled, but then he made his fatal mistake. Have you got a light? He said. Well, I'd heard about Shop bringing on a craving for a smoke, and I thought this was a good sign. He held onto the window and took a fag out of his pocket. Here, I said. Catch, and I threw him a box of matches. He put his hand out to catch the matches and fell out of the window. Luckily, Tubby Edlin was just outside hanging on the ladder, and banging into Tubby's stomach must have broken his fall. Down below, the fire brigade lads had stretched out the canvas sheet they bring for people to throw money into. As he hit the sheet, the money scattered in all directions and most of it was never recovered. I've argued every year about having collecting tins. It's a much tidier operation than having all these loose coins flying around. Outside, I could see that Tubby wasn't pleased at the turn of events. He was holding his stomach and counting to 10 in a thick, gasping voice. Well, after that, I resigned from the job. It's got altogether too nerve-wracking. And do you know, when I got downstairs, the man in the betting shop swore I hadn't put the bet on. Well, I didn't have time to stop and write it out, but a nod is as good as a wink to a blind donkey.